T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
My name is Gary Parish, speaking to you from Memphis, Tennessee. Ben Adol's producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day best you can.
Well, Daddy lost most everything on horse, whiskey, and Wendy's.
And I hope you have access to C-SPAN 3, because if you have access to C-SPAN 3, you got to watch Mark Emmert, Mark Few, and various members of the college athletics community testify in front of a Senate panel this morning about their desperate desire to get a federal bill that covers name, image, and likeness rights in advance of July 1st, which is just right around the corner, because 5 states are going to have name, image, and likeness laws on the books come July 1st, at which point we've got an unbalanced playing field in the world of college athletics. I won't tell you it was riveting, but it was interesting, and we'll talk about it momentarily. But first, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. At 4:20, Joe Sheehan's going to join me. He, of course, is the author of the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. I'm a subscriber. You should be, too. And I wanted to talk to Joe because, A, I love baseball. B, he's terrific. And C, it has been a sport generating real national headlines in recent weeks and days, based on the idea that Major League Baseball is finally trying to crack down on pitchers using foreign substances on baseballs. So I'll talk to Joe Sheehan about that and other things, obviously, among them Jacob deGrom, the greatest pitcher in the history of the world. Joe Sheehan's going to be here 4:20 in the next segment. When I finish that, I'm going to take a break, come back, do 4 notable stories at 4:44, at which point I'll discuss 4 previously undiscussed stories. Among them, Jay Williams addressed his Kevin Durant controversy this morning on ESPN Radio. He said he stands by his story, but realizes he probably shouldn't have shared it publicly. I think that's exactly right. In fact, that's what we said yesterday. I'll play the audio for you around 4:44. Utah took a 1-0 lead over the Clippers last night in a fun game in Salt Lake City. Donovan Mitchell was awesome, went big, 45 points. We'll talk about that a little later on this hour. Former Mississippi State standout Montez Sweat, who now plays for Washington's football team, he made headlines today by saying he probably won't get vaccinated, even though the team wants him to do it. He said he needs more information, but also said he doesn't like the front office bringing in experts to talk to the team. Experts, it should be noted, who have, see if you can follow me here, more information. What? You say you want more information, so they're bringing in people with more information, but you don't want that. What? Wonder if he recognizes his breakdown in logic. I doubt it. We'll talk about it just before 5 o'clock. And remember that Virginia Tech football player who was charged with murder earlier this month?
Yes.
Details from that incident are emerging. Wild story. I'll tell you more about it during 4 notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always, then I will eventually do dinner to go and get on out of here. So that's the rundown. We do got a lot to get to. But I wanted to start with college athletics developments in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. You probably saw folks tweeting about it all day earlier today. And if not, here's the deal. NCAA President Mark Emmert and various other people connected to college sports, among them Gonzaga coach Mark Few, they were on Capitol Hill today to testify in front of a panel of United States senators about their desire to have a national bill that will determine how NCAA athletes earn money from their name, image, and likeness. That panel includes five senators, three Democrats, two Republicans is the breakdown. And the Republicans are, coincidentally or not, both from our region. Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee is one of them, and Roger Wicker from Mississippi is the other. So there's a local connection to this story that is honestly becoming more urgent by the day, because in less than a month, on July 1st to be exact, five states, specifically Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, and New Mexico, will have new laws on the books that allow student-athletes to profit from their name, image, and likeness rights, at which point everybody will be playing by different rules. In some states, amateurs will still be amateurs in the strictest sense of the word. But in other states, players will be able to make money from endorsements and other things. In other words, on July 1st, DJ Jeffries will be able to profit from his name, image, and likeness because he's at Mississippi State. But DeAndre Williams won't be allowed to do the same thing because he's at Memphis. DJ Jeffries will be in a state that has name, image, and likeness laws on the books. DeAndre Williams will not. So DJ Jeffries can do some things that DeAndre Williams cannot do. And so obviously, this is, I don't want to say a problem, because I don't necessarily see it as a problem. I just don't care the way other people care. But it is a big issue, undeniably, in the sport. Because the fear, and this is one of the things Mark Few talked about today, the fear is that on July 1st, let's say you're Ben Howland at Mississippi State, and you pick up the phone and you reach out to a grassroots coach of a player who's now at, say, Gonzaga, and you say, hey, listen, between us, you know, I don't know how happy so-and-so is, you know, at Gonzaga. I noticed he's only playing 11 minutes a game. If he were interested in transferring at the semester, you know, make sure he knows that, you know, we at Mississippi State are in a state that has name, image, and likeness law on the books. And so, you know, I obviously can't be involved in it, but, you know, I play golf with boosters, and one of them owns a car lot. And you know, I feel comfortable telling you that I bet you, more likely than not, if this player transferred to Starkville, first day on campus, he'd have an endorsement deal with a car dealership, maybe worth $20,000, maybe worth $200,000. So if he were interested in that, just keep that in mind. Obviously, if he decides to transfer, there's a lot of places he would go. But we are, at this moment, one of only five states that have this name, image, and likeness law on the books. And so, if he wants to make some money while he's playing basketball, well, he can do it legally at Mississippi State. Mark Few was talking about this today, not about Mississippi State or Ben Howland specifically, but just the idea of this, that it will become a recruiting advantage coming out for schools that are in states that can do this. It'll become a recruiting advantage when you're recruiting high school prospects, but it'll also be a recruiting advantage via the transfer portal, which is obviously a big thing now. Imagine you're at the University of Nebraska and you're just playing, and you're a star, if there's a such thing as being a star basketball player at the University of Nebraska, and you're just playing for your scholarship and cost of attendance stipend. But you know you can transfer to a school in Florida and profit off of your name, image, and likeness. I mean, it could genuinely be the difference between playing in a state for nothing more than your scholarship and cost of attendance stipend, or playing in a different state for your scholarship, cost of attendance stipend, and $500,000. Well, which state you going to? I know which state I'm going to. I know which state my children would go to. And so that's where the sense of urgency comes from. The NCAA has been kicking this can down the road, so to speak, for years and years and years, if not decades. And eventually, state lawmakers decided, we're not going to wait for you anymore. We're going to develop bills that allow student athletes to get what they're worth. And we're going to put them on the books in different times, but the earliest ones are coming in just a few weeks, July 1st, 2021. Five states will have these laws on the books. And if you can't get your stuff together by then, well, then that's on you. To the extent that this is a problem, it is a problem you've created. And so what Mark Few and Mark Emmert and other people were in Washington, D.C. today doing is begging Congress, like actually begging Congress, please give us a federal law that supersedes all state laws and protects us from class action lawsuits. Like, we need protection and we need one federal law. And as they talked about it and talked about it and talked about it, if you followed it by watching it or just on Twitter, you probably saw the word guardrails a lot, or you heard it a lot. We need a law that supersedes all state laws, but we need a way for student athletes to profit off their name, image, and likeness, but with guardrails. And various senators pushed back on this, and one senator even went so far as to say, he's the senator from Connecticut, he said, I'll never support a federal law that doesn't go as far as the furthest state law. Now, that doesn't mean that that's where this is going, but he made it clear, unless the federal law goes as far as the farthest state law, I'm not interested in it. And that's obviously not what the NCAA wanted to hear, because they want a law with guardrails. And this is the same rhetoric we've heard for years, but it never becomes less frustrating when you hear it, because I've never agreed that guardrails need to be in place. I've always believed that student athletes should be able to get whatever they can get. I don't want any limits on it. I don't want any guardrails on it. If a quarterback at one school, if somebody wants to give that quarterback $1 million advertising deal, then I want that quarterback to be able to get $1 million. I want everybody to be able to get whatever it is somebody is willing to give them. Because if you stop short of that at all, you are not giving student athletes the same financial rights that every other student on campus has. As I've said a million times, when I was in college, I was on scholarship my senior year at the University of Memphis, a journalism scholarship. And yet I was still allowed to take money from the Commercial Appeal, from the Memphis Flyer, from the Washington Post, from the Birmingham Post-Herald, to write for them. I wrote for all of those publications when I was in college. And I got paid. And there were no guardrails. And there were no limits. Nobody told me how much I could get paid. Nobody told me how much I could earn. So why should a football player be held to any different standard? Why should a basketball player be held to a different standard? Why should anybody be held to a different standard? I was a student, and I could take whatever I could get, even while on scholarship. And not only was it not frowned upon, it was celebrated. My professors were proud of me. So why would we hold student athletes to any other standard? Here's what they would tell you. That if you don't have guardrails in place, then the schools with the most robust fan bases, biggest boosters, wealthiest donors, that they'll just buy up all the best players. And though that's not technically true, they won't buy up all the best players, it is mostly true. That is the way it would work. You would know that if you're a football player, if you went to Alabama, you'd probably be able to get a better deal than if you went to the University of Memphis. And if you were a basketball player, you'd probably know that if you went to North Carolina, you'd probably be able to get a better deal than if you went to Southeast Louisiana. And that's what they want the guardrails, to protect the smaller schools from getting overwhelmed by the bigger schools. But here's the issue I've always had with this. We don't do it anywhere else. We don't do it anywhere else. We don't say the bigger schools can't use private planes because that's a recruiting advantage over the smaller schools. We don't say the bigger schools can't spend $20 million on a practice facility because the smaller schools can't do it. We don't say the bigger schools can't stay in these nice, nice, nice hotels because the smaller schools can't afford to do it. We allow the bigger schools to spend and outspend the smaller schools in every way you can imagine. Yeah. So why do we draw the line with the players? Laird Veach is the athletic director at the University of Memphis right now. If he does so well at the University of Memphis, someday the Alabama job opens and Alabama wants him, he will be the Alabama AD. You want to know why? Because Alabama will be able to provide him with more money and a better job. Every single year, we allow the bigger schools to buy the best basketball coaches and football coaches. If you are a successful mid-major coach, you will someday be a high-major coach. Somebody will buy you. And we don't have a problem with that. So my whole issue with this guardrail stuff is why? We don't have guardrails in place to protect the little schools when it comes to their coaches or their athletic directors. So why do we care about their players? We tell coaches, go out and get whatever you can get from wherever you can get it. We tell athletic directors, go get whatever you can get from wherever you can get it. So why don't we tell the players the same thing? Hopefully some senators ask that question more directly next time. And when they go to actually write a federal bill to cover name, image, and likeness rights, that it doesn't include any guardrails or limits at all. We'll see. Joe Sheehan is up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Stretch my hands to you.
Life like, this is what the life like. Try to live the life right. People really know you. Push your buttons like type right. This is like a movie, but it's really
Utah took a 1-0 lead in its best-of-seven series over the Clippers last night in Salt Lake City. Donovan Mitchell got 45 points. He was awesome. We'll talk NBA in the next segment. Jeff Calkins will be here a little after 5 o'clock, but right now he writes the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter that arrives in your inbox several times a week. I'm a subscriber, and if you want to be smarter about baseball, you should subscribe as well. You can do it at joesheehan.com. Please make him the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. Using food and wine to create memorable times.
Joe, I appreciate you being here. Thank you for your time. And let's start with what has been the biggest topic in the sport, which is pitchers using foreign substances. Simply put, how bad has it been? How bad is it right now?
I don't know what else to use the word bad. I will say that it's prevalent, and it's become more prevalent, both in terms of the substances that are being used and their effectiveness at helping pitchers gain spin rate, and the number of pitchers that are using them. And you know, there are some parallels to what we saw 20 years ago with the teams kind of, if not necessarily telling their players to do it, quietly encouraging the use, because frankly, it works. There's been some great research into the additional spin that you get going from, say, nothing on your hand to a mix of sunscreen and rosin to pine tar to spider tack, which is this like super glue stuff that you can like walk around with a concrete block on your hand. So there's been some great research. You know, Saras at The Athletic, Travis Sawchuk at The Score, kind of focusing on this issue over the last, like, I would say there's been a ramp up maybe the last 6 to 8 months. The reason we're talking about it now is more about the downtick in offense this year. Everybody, you know, myself included, in writing about how, you know, home runs are down, hits are down. We've got the lowest batting average since 1968, which was the lowest ever. So MLB, which put a new ball in place this year, and that ball is the cause of the drop in offense, is kind of trying to take some of the heat off that decision by saying, well, no, it's the pitchers and their sticky stuff.
Well, you wrote about this today. I read it this afternoon. You know, I guess on a very surface level, let me ask you this. Why would they deaden the ball to the extent that they did?
There was a lot of bad reaction to the home run rates. The home runs set a record for home runs in 17, set another record for home runs in 19. The game really has become very much about the three true outcomes, home runs, walks, and strikeouts. There's not a lot of action in the game. I think MLB was going for a double bank shot by saying, okay, we're going to deaden the ball, and they have. The ball comes off, is lighter. It comes off the bat harder, but it doesn't fly as far. So you're seeing, like, exit velocity be, you know, the highest we've ever had, but the ball just doesn't fly. So outcomes on contact, homer to fly ball, slugging on contact, batting average on contact, all those numbers are down. And I think what baseball was hoping would happen is that they say, well, we'll deaden the baseball, and then everybody will go back to hitting like Rod Carew. Like, they were going to deaden the ball, and 400 guys were going to decide, you know what, I'm going to choke up on the bat and go the other way. And that was never going to happen, because the reason the game looks the way it does now is because the pitchers are just that good. They throw harder than ever before. They get more spin than ever before, even independent of the sticky stuff. Hitters hit the way they do because it's the only way to put runs on the board. So MLB kind of bought into this idea that, oh, it's really just the hitters, just, you know, launch angle and not caring about going other way, the other way. So they put a ball in play hoping to change behavior, and behavior was not going to change. So what we have now is the constantly growing strikeout rate. Strikeout rates are about 24% of plate appearances. Strikeouts are far more common than hits at this point. But you also now have a deadened baseball so that when the ball is hit, not as much is happening. So you basically have the worst of both worlds right now.
So back to the sticky stuff, as you put it. MLB says it's going to crack down, and they're just going to randomly have umpires checking maybe 8 to 10 times a game, pulling balls out of play and examining them. When they sort of announced this to the world, it was noticeable that Trevor Bauer's spin rate went down in his next start. Garrett Cole's spin rate went down. Garrett Cole, I believe, either today or yesterday, was asked specifically if he's ever used spider tack, and he just said, I don't know how to answer that, which is an admission of guilt, to the extent that it's guilt at all. Do you approve of the approach MLB is now taking to try to get that specific issue under control?
I don't, largely because they're making a spectacle of it, and again, shifting the blame for the deadened baseball to the players. Players were using this stuff in 16 and 17 and 18. Michael Pineda was suspended for having pine tar on his neck, the twin starter. He was with the Yankees at the time, back in 2014. Like, this has been an issue in the game. And MLB could have taken steps at any point in the last 5 or 6 years to say, hey, look, we want to put a stop to this. And the reason they're doing it now isn't because of the use of the substances. It's because the dead ball has taken offense out of the game. It's a misdirection move by MLB. Stick a pin in that for a second. Yes, we should make the pitchers adhere to rule, it's like 6.02C4, which was put on the books 100 years ago, and it says you can't put stuff on the baseball. Remember, they banned the spitball to 1920. You're not supposed to do this. And it's kind of been this back and forth throughout history, right? Gaylord Perry went into the Hall of Fame laughing about how the fact that he threw a splitter gets you really close to getting the SEC problem, yes. I got to say. You know, this has been an ongoing thing in baseball. Like, pretending this is like an invention, like, oh, my God, the current generation of players just started cheating, is ridiculous. We've got 100 years of guys trying to get around the rules by putting stuff on the baseball. This is part of a continuum. And for baseball to wake up in the middle of the season, mind you, like if they had done this in January, I think they would have had a leg to stand on. But they're doing this in the middle of the season because offense is down and they're trying to misdirect. Should we enforce this rule? Yes. This idea that we're going to frisk players 8 to 10 times a game is right there. It's the sweet spot for MLB, which is MLB just constantly trashes the players. Gary, I turned 50 earlier this year, and my entire life, baseball has trashed the players. They're greedy. They're disloyal. They're selfish. They're cheaters. They're druggies. This is in a part with all that. Baseball is going to literally have umpires check the players on the field to create this entire spectacle of all these guys are cheaters. Whereas if the NFL had a situation like this, they would issue a press release and never talk about it again. This is the biggest difference between MLB and the other sports. MLB trashes the players year in and year out, and the other sports bury this stuff.
Talking to Joe Sheehan, he writes the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. You can subscribe at joesheehan.com. Is there a perceived biggest cheater among the pitchers? Is it Trevor Bauer, Gerrit Cole? I saw video of Brandon Woodruff that looked pretty incriminating, and then you go look at his numbers throughout his career compared to this year, and there's a noticeable difference. In baseball circles, is there somebody that is sort of the poster boy of this, the way, say, Mark McGwire might have been or Sammy Sosa might have been?
Well, this is the problem, right? We're only going to focus on the guys who are doing really well.
Right.
In the same way that if you use steroids and you went from 12 to 17 home runs, nobody cared. If you're using this stuff to go from a 5 ERA to a 4 ERA, no one cares. But kind of to sidestep your question a bit, it's not so much a player as there is a team, and Cole is related here. The Astros have kind of been at the focus of this. And again, this goes back to, you know, we focus on the Astros for a lot of things, but you look at, you know, what they got out of Cole after acquiring him from the Pirates, and you look at, you know, the way Verlander improved after being traded from the Tigers. There's always been a suspicion that the Astros are at the front of anything that kind of skates the rules a little bit. So, again, I don't want to – names – you know, there was a – Trevor Bauer did a thing a couple of years back where he went out in the first inning and he had these incredible spin rates. And then in the second inning, he went back to his normal ones. And he basically was trying to demonstrate on the field – that if you use this stuff, this was the effect on your spin rate. So it's not that Bauer's perceived as a cheater. Bauer's kind of perceived as the guy trying to point out everybody else is cheating.
Is it possible that we're going to find out some of these guys got these massive contracts because of this stuff? Like Gerrit Cole signed an incredible contract. Is it possible we'll find out, oh, wow, once they crack down on this, he's not the same guy?
It's possible. It'll be a while before we know. And it'll also be hard to – is it because of the stuff or because he happened to peak in those years?
Right.
And, you know, this is the tug. This is – it's hard because everything in baseball is multifactorial. You know, the player is getting older. The league is catching up with him. He's starting to get, you know, sore as he gets older. So I think it's going to be hard. I will say that from a public perception standpoint, the rest of Gerrit Cole's season is going to go a long way to driving the perceptions of Cole and the perceptions of this problem. I can talk about the facts and the data all we want, but this is very much now a public perception. So if you're Cole going to the mound tonight in Minnesota, you know that a lot of people are watching your performance for more than just, will the Yankees win tonight?
There's no question. I'm talking to Joe Sheehan. He writes the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. You can subscribe at joesheehan.com. All right, let's switch gears. Two-time Cy Young Award winner Jacob DeGrom, and you knew I was going to get here at some point, has a 0.62 ERA through nine starts. That's the lowest ERA through nine starts for anybody since ERA became an official stat in 1912. I spend a few minutes on this show after every start talking about him, whether people like it or not. Folks listening right now know what I think. You're smarter than I am on the subject. What are we watching right now when we watch Jacob DeGrom?
There's a reasonable case to be made that right now, in the late spring of 2021, Jacob DeGrom is the best pitcher who has ever lived. Like, if you think about evolution and how, you know, Walter Johnson was playing a different game, Lefty Grove, what have you, pitchers are always getting better. You look at the raw skills. Jacob DeGrom is a starting pitcher with the highest average fastball velocity in baseball history, and he's commanding it. And you look at the outputs. You mentioned the 0.62 ERA. You put all that together, and it's DeGrom or it's peak Kershaw, peak Pedro, peak Roger Clemens. Those are the candidates for the very best pitchers who have ever lived. That's what DeGrom is doing right now.
His velocity keeps going up. He's throwing harder than ever, even though he's now in his 30s. On a surface level, that should be considered a great thing because it makes him more overwhelming. But I know that it concerns you. Why?
If you look at the hardest throwing starters ever, it's a list of guys who eventually had Tommy John surgery or elbow problems that never quite developed in Tommy John surgery. The hardest throwing starters include guys like Strasburg, Yordano Ventura, who passed, who had elbow problems prior to that. It's Garrett Richards. It's Noah Syndergaard. You pretty much look at the guys who threw the hardest, the starters with the hardest fastballs ever, and they all got hurt. So, look, you know, DeGrom, maybe it's different. He's doing it at an older age than most guys did. He had Tommy John surgery 10 years ago now. He had a fairly low workload in his 20s. So you could say, okay, there's all these factors that mean he's not going to get hurt. But, Gary, I got to tell you, every time he walks off the mound, I'm watching him to see, is he shaking his arm? Is he holding his elbow? Because the track record of guys, of starting pitchers who throw this hard, is absolutely terrible.
One more thing on the Mets. Francisco Lindor is a career low in basically every offensive category. In year one of a $341 million contract, should I be concerned?
Well, he stopped using the sticky stuff. And then, you know, the strikeout-to-walk ratio is still pretty good. It's all on contact stuff. And I don't know if he's hiding an injury. I give guys a pass for last year. And Lindor had, you know, one of his worst seasons last year. But this is a full season with a full spring training. He's been in the lineup. There hasn't been, you know, mention of a major injury. And he just looks like a guy who's just physically compromised. So, you know, we saw Jose Ramirez do this maybe 2-3 years ago where he got off to just a terrible couple of months start and then turned it around. And I mentioned him because he was a teammate of Lindor's at the time. But it's not that unusual for guys to have a bad half and then turn it around. But this has gone from, it's a slow start, to, okay, this is something I'm definitely watching more carefully.
It's a controversial moment Sunday night, Yankees-Red Sox. Just a horrific called strike three on a pitch that missed by several inches. And I love what you tweeted that night, which is one of the arguments against automated strikes and balls is that, you know, what if it blew a call in a crucial moment? You know, I don't know that your counter argument to something should be, what if it does the same thing I just watched this human umpire do? Will we have an automated ball strike system in Major League Baseball in, say, the next 10 years?
Yes, that's a good time frame. I think it'd be sooner than that. I think I would be surprised if we don't have it by 2031. It's coming. They're working on it in the minor leagues. There are things you will basically have to redefine a strike, and you'll have to redefine the strike zone. But I think it'll be worth it so that pitches are called based on where they cross the plate. Because right now, you've got pitches that are called based on what the catcher does, and I've always hated that. Pitch should be called ball or strike based on where it crosses the plate. So. Yeah, and the idea that, oh, my God, the system might break down and miss a pitch. Okay, we just saw a rally end on a pitch 5 inches outside. Human umpires make those kind of mistakes literally every single game, literally every single day. There was a Sunday night game between the Cubs and Cardinals a few weeks back. We had the same thing. The home plate umpire was calling everything that landed in the state of Missouri was a strike. It's got to stop. We've got to get the balls and strikes called. And this will also, Gary, help offense. When you call the rule book strike zone, it will help the hitters hit.
I'll wrap it up here with Joe Sheehan. On the subject of helping hitters hit, one other possibility, and I know they're experimenting with this at the minor league level as well, moving the mound back 12 inches. How much would that help, and would you be in favor of it?
Well, we're trying to figure out now how much it's going to help. That's what these experiments are about. It's been my preferred solution for about 5 years now. I used to think you could fix this by mandating only a certain number of pitchers on the roster. I think we're past that. You've got to remember, the mound was put in its current location. The rubber was put in its current location 125 years ago. Pitchers were 5'3" and weighed 87 pounds, and they threw like 43 miles an hour. And now you've got guys like Tyler Glass now who are, you know, 6'8" and throwing the ball 100 miles an hour. You've got to move the mound back. And it's going to be a hard sell because 55% of the players' union is pitchers, and they're never going to sign on for this. But I think if we see baseball with a 61-foot, 6-inch mound, with a lower strikeout rate and more balls in play and more excitement, that will be and that will change the conversation. But until we actually see and see the data from that and see that pitchers aren't getting hurt, it's going to be a hard sell. You talk about 10 years for automated ball strike calling, it might be 20 for moving the mound.
It is Joe Sheehan. He writes the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. I am a subscriber. You should be too. You can subscribe right now at joesheehan.com. Go check that website, joesheehan.com. Buddy, terrific as always. I appreciate your time, and I'll catch up with you down the road.
Thanks, GP. Take care.
All right, buddy. That's Joe Sheehan, who writes the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. It's terrific. Best $50 a year I've spent. It comes into your inbox. I read it every single day, no matter what he's writing about, because, listen, there are a lot of people who write about baseball. I don't know that anybody writes about it more intelligently than Joe. Like when I read what he writes, I feel smarter about what I'm watching because I spend a lot of time watching baseball. And he's one of the people who, you know, can make me rethink my positions. Like, hey, this is what I think about this thing. If he agrees with me, I feel good about it. If he doesn't, well, then I know that I probably need to rethink it a little bit.
I'm surprised you didn't ask him about Orioles-Mets last night.
God, Big Bet Bennett. David Peterson is trash.
How about them O's, man?
They beat him up pretty good.
38 runs in the past three games.
Dude, the game was over.
It's crazy.
It just,
we're hitting that thing.
You are hitting that thing. And
it's a little too late, but it's all good. I like a little.
No, I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. No, my normal thing is I go home and you know, Mets game is on, whether we're downstairs or upstairs, like the Mets game is on. And Mets actually jumped to a, you know, I listened to it on my drive home because it was a 6:05 start last night. Mm-hmm. Jumped to a 2-0 lead. I'm like, oh, okay, let's go. Well, then it's 2-2. And then down 3-2, then down 4-2. Then it was down like a million. Then it's just over. So at some point, normally I like to like be as focused as I can on it because I like actually enjoy watching baseball. And at some point, enjoyment turns into frustration. Mm-hmm. And I told the little guys, I said, all right, get your gloves. We're playing catch.
Yep.
We're going to play catch for a little while to distract Daddy from the struggling New York Mets. I don't know what to do with this David Peterson. He's supposed to be a part of the rotation. He stinks.
He's not very good.
Awful. And tonight.
We'll do it again tonight.
You know who's pitching for Baltimore tonight?
Matt Harvey. Yeah.
The Dark Knight.
Let's go.
Man, Mets
he hasn't been great.
He's been nice.
Let's be honest.
I actually feel really bad for him in the sense that he was a game one starter in the World Series in 2015. And he was a year or two from getting the big contract. Among the crimes in Major League Baseball is that these guys don't make anything for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and then sometimes it could be too late.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like you'll have somebody in contention for a Cy Young Award, like of a young pitcher.
Right.
And he's making $800,000. Like, it's crazy. Like, Noah Syndergaard had to live in New York City with a roommate. Because he can't afford to live in Manhattan without
That's
a roommate.
That's insane.
All right? And he's starting World Series. He's an all-star. Like, DeGrom finally got paid. But Harvey was still on the little contract. Mm-hmm. And he was like a year or two away from getting, like, you could honestly look at yourself in the mirror if you're Matt Harvey at this one point in time and say, if I am still pitching the way I'm pitching right now, 2 years from now, I will sign a $200 million contract. That's what I'm about to get. I just can't get hurt, and I don't have to get better. Just be this. If I can be a worthy Game 1 World Series starter 2 years from now, I will sign a $200 million contract. And then he gets hurt. He's just not the same. Bounces around.
Mm-hmm.
Mets let him go. Signs with Baltimore. Every time I watch him pitch, he's getting beat around.
Yeah, he's not. His record's not great this year.
Like, his injury it changed him and cost him actually like $200 million. Absolutely insane. So I feel bad for the guy. On the other hand, like, he didn't have the best reputation.
No.
As taking care of himself and focusing the way he should focus.
Right.
So maybe that's the larger lesson here. Jay Williams, this morning on his radio show, addressed his controversy with Kevin Durant after Kevin Durant called him a liar yesterday. We'll play the audio for you next. Listen to the Gary Parrish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Tokyo and I'm Godzilla, playing blackjack versus death gun on the car dealer. Just bought a demon, I'm screaming about the car dealer. The last temptation of Mike, but I'm a God digger. Tell me as a Bob that the God don't need a job, and if I did, the oligarchs would be missing, murdered, and wrong. This is Bonaparte, and he paid with Tucson, and they went on a world conquest, tearing your Bonaparte. Michael remained murderous, but still virtuous. Wait to kill the petty, you found out the church services. Not a holy man, but a moral in my perversion. So I support the sex workers unionizing their service.
Are you looking for auto insurance, homeowners insurance, life insurance, business insurance? If so, get in touch with Elizabeth Rook Insurance. That's a second generation local agency that's been owned and operated since 1981. If you live in Tennessee, Elizabeth can help you. Mississippi, she can help you. She's a proud partner with Memphis Tigers Athletics. So if somebody likes to support businesses that support the local athletic department, then Elizabeth Rook Insurance is the business for you. I can't emphasize enough that this is a locally owned agency with locations in the Memphis area. Because at some point, whether it's auto insurance, homeowners insurance, you're going to have to make a claim. Somebody's going to smash your car. You know, you're going to get roof damage from the weather. I don't know. It's going to come up. And when you reach that point, you want to call 1-800 number and talk to somebody who lives in a different state you've never met, doesn't know you? Or do you want to talk to somebody who lives here, who knows you, who you can go to their office and see them face-to-face if you want? I know what I'd rather do. So get in touch with Elizabeth Rook Insurance. Phone number is 901-867-SAVE, 901-867-7283. Two locations in the area, one on Canada Road in Lakeland, the other on Highway 51 in Covington. 867-7283. On the web, rookinsurance.com. Jeff Calkins will be here a little after 5 o'clock. Right now, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's Four Notable Stories at 4:44. Story number one.
So the wild thing about being involved in a controversy that is creating national headlines when you have a radio show each morning is that you can't really hide from it. You got to address it. So this morning, Jay Williams on his show that you can listen to right here on 92.9 FM ESPN, he addressed the controversy with Kevin Durant. If you missed it, yesterday morning on his radio show, Jay detailed a time when he bumped into Kevin Durant at the club, and KD said, "Man, don't you ever, ever compare me to Giannis Antetokounmpo. That dude ain't me. Don't you put my name next to his. He ain't me." In other words, saying, yeah, he's won an MVP, and he's clearly good. He can't do the things I do. He ain't me. So don't compare him to me, because he doesn't compare. So Jay tells his story on radio yesterday morning. KD says it's a lie, never happened, and told Jay to keep his name out of his mouth on all subjects going forward, more or less. So Jay had to address it this morning on radio, and here's what he said.
I stand by my story. You know, I was probably wrong for sharing a personal story, but that's what we do. We share personal stories. But yesterday I sat there. I'm not getting back and forth on social media. I was with my family all day, staying positive. It's all good. And, you know, for us, look, man, it was meant as a compliment. There are levels to this. It was about, you know, saying, hey, how different KD is. It's unfortunate that KD felt that way at that moment. But I wish KD nothing but love and all the best success. I hope they win a championship. We talk about them every single day. Shoot, the other day I was talking about him being the best player in the world. So that's all I got to say about that. We're moving on. Kia and I are talking about sports the way we typically talk about sports. And that's the end of that, in my opinion. We rock out and we talk about games moving forward. Now, there's some other people that made some other comments that I might address later on, but we'll save that for another day.
Yeah. Ooh, Jay might go at somebody else's throat.
I want to know who.
Who is he frustrated with? I think he got that mostly right, and it pretty much echoes what we talked about yesterday. What did I tell you yesterday when we talked about this story? That KD was lying, that this thing really did happen.
Yes.
Perhaps it was embellished or enhanced a bit. You know, because storytelling sometimes goes that way. But the gist of the story, they're at a club. KD approaches Jay and says, hey, man, don't compare me to Giannis. He ain't me. Like I said, I promise you that happened. I don't know Jay well, but I know him well enough to know he's not going to go on national television, national radio, and just make up a story. Like, people don't do that. So the story was always true. But what else did I tell you?
He shouldn't have said it.
Shouldn't have said it.
Right.
That was a private conversation between two people who, if they aren't friends, they're certainly friendly. And KD never meant for Jay Williams to take that story to radio or to television. When you have a job like we have, where you speak publicly and also, you know, interact with athletes or celebrities regularly or even sometimes, there's an understanding between people of what's on the record, what's off. When I'm just talking to you and when I'm talking to you for the purposes of a story or an interview. And it was so clear to me, even the way Jay told that story, that it was a story that should not have been shared publicly. So I think Jay got it basically right this morning. He said, I stand by the story, but I probably shouldn't have shared it. The only word I would remove from there is probably. I would replace it with definitely. The story is true, but he definitely should not have shared it yesterday morning.
Story number two.
Donovan Mitchell went big last night. 45 points and a 112-109 victory over the Clippers. Did you get a chance to watch this?
I did.
You did pretty good on your bets last night,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, we did all right last night.
Even my mom texted me. She was like, Big Bet Bennett did okay
2-0
today.
2-0 last night.
Well, did you? What'd you lay on that Utah? What'd you lay?
Well, it was, wasn't it, so the Philly one was 6.5, right?
Yeah, you're fine there.
Yeah, it was good there. And Utah, I don't know, but I don't think I did good on that one because it was -3, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was still, you pushed it then.
Yeah.
112-109?
Yeah. I didn't bet on that. I bet on the Philly.
If you take a win and a push, hey, I'll take a win and a push every night.
Me too, absolutely.
You give me a win and a push every night, I'll take it. So, fun game. Like, it was a fun game. And the story was obviously Donovan Mitchell. It wasn't just 45 points. It was 45 of the 112. It ain't like they scored 140 and he got 45. He scored 45 of the 112, 16 of 30 from the field, 6 of 15 from three-point range, and he is now starting to put together some kind of playoff resume. I saw these floating around on social media this morning. He now has 3 playoff games with at least 45 points. 3 already in his career. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has 2. Shaq has 2. Charles Barkley, 2. Damian Lillard, 2. James Harden, 1. Steph Curry, 1. Donovan Mitchell's got 3. So that's wild.
Yeah.
He's now scored 490 points in his last 15 playoff games. Here's a complete list of basketball players in the history of the NBA. Oh, no. Of active basketball players. So guys who are still playing today. A complete list of guys who, over any 15-game stretch of playoff games, have scored at least 490 points. Donovan Mitchell, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant.
How about that?
That's it.
That's unbelievable.
And so I just remember earlier this season, you probably do too, when he was on TNT, and I guess
it was Shaq. Yep.
Said, I just don't think you've got it to take it to the next level. You're a good player, but I don't think you can take it to the next level. And Donovan said, okay.
I wonder if they had him on last night. They need to get, because we need to revisit that.
He looks like he can take it to the next level.
I think so. I mean, dude, let's just call it like it is. Like, he comes back in game 2 of the Grizzlies series, and it's
over.
It's over.
It's a wrap.
Like, I mean, he's that good. He's that much of a difference maker.
And I know, like, at least I heard some people, like, during the Grizzlies Utah, like, I hate Donovan Mitchell. Like, I lie.
No, I think he's a likable guy.
He seems incredibly likable.
I think so too. I can understand where some of the annoyance comes from, but I think he seems like a likable guy too.
Seems like a likable guy to me. And so Donovan Mitchell, 45 points last night, and the Jazz are up 1-0, and they did it without Mike Conley. Hopefully Mike is ready to go in game 2.
Story number 3.
So you remember the story about this Virginia Tech player who was charged with murder?
Yes.
His name is Ise Itute, maybe something like that.
Well, I knew you were going to talk about this, so I read this story. Whew.
So the details are now starting to come out, because initially it's like Virginia Tech football player arrested for murder. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, kill the man that he knew.
Whoa.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.